This is the Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
And we are back. It's just gone 9:05 in the UK. I can see lovely weather out there. I hope it's going to be a boom sunshine weekend. I was dreaming, aren't I? Right. What have I got to say? First of all, of course, wherever you are receiving us, welcome to the Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk, be that on Rumble or YouTube or Instagram or streaming on X or right here at TNT. Do not go anywhere. Not only do you have The Breakfast Show, but you also have such brilliant shows as Johnny Vedmore and James Freeman and David Curtin. I mean, do I need to go on? There is absolutely no reason for you to change your dial. And I appreciate that's about 50 years old to say that, but so what? Now, thank you again to every single comment that is coming in. Absolutely wonderful to see that. Craig is on Twitter. I keep saying Twitter. We all say Twitter, don't we? On X, saying that he had a shout out this morning regarding the Madeleine McCann viral tweet. Yes, you did indeed, Craig. That's what happens when you get 5 million on your tweet and you are a regular TNT chatterer. We will give you that shout out indeed. Now, there's a news story that deeply upset me. It deeply upset me because yesterday, we discussed on the news review with Peter McIlvenna about this outrageous 54 million benefit fraud that had taken place. And it was quite extraordinary. And it was the biggest ever benefit fraud in the UK. And I had no idea how it had been achieved, because even though they had forged documents, you know, including passports and birth certificates and all manner of other things, I've seen people go through the universal credit process, and it really wasn't that straightforward at all. In fact, they had to turn up at local job centres every week to register. And so I literally don't know how this was possible, how these benefit factories are possible. It's almost like they're allowed to happen in order to be able to then clamp down on legitimate people. And I say that because today's story has really upset me. Basically, the Department for Work and Pensions, who are responsible for all this, is now threatening unpaid carers with prosecution over minor breaches of benefit rules. And I find that absolutely extraordinary. Now, I've seen carers, my brother, over minor breaches of benefit rules. And I find that absolutely extraordinary. Now, I've seen carers, my brother was very, very sick with kidney disease, and his wife, Ange, God bless her, my brother has now passed, sadly, but Ange was as devoted as anyone could humanly be. And carers, especially unpaid carers are not people who are coming into the home, right, necessarily. They are people who are probably already in the home for the most part, but they're usually relatives, they're usually family. And it is extremely hard. They need respite, and oftentimes they don't get it. And so what we're seeing with the DWP is they're literally going after these people. And these are minor infractions. This is nothing major at all. And I just find it extraordinary. I'll give you one example. One carer, Miss Greater, had exceeded the then earnings limit of £120 a week by a minor amount. And we are talking a difference of about £12. Right. So it's quite extraordinary that they're going to go after these people. Right. That, you know, because also it will be variable. It will fluctuate how much money some of these carers are making. Not all carers are being paid. And it is a really demanding job. You know, we love our loved ones, don't we? But when they fall ill and when they need us, sometimes that can be real strain, especially if we're holding down a job ourselves, you know, with a family ourselves. And many people are under that pressure. And the last thing they need is the Department of Work and Pensions coming after them as if they are criminals just because of these like little minor differences. Perhaps what needs to happen is we need to raise the threshold. £120 a week is absolutely nothing. Raise that threshold. Because, you know, this is going after the little people. I hate using that expression, but you know exactly what I mean. This is not, again, going after bankers or people with, you know, a multitude of properties who aren't paying taxes. This is going after hardworking individuals whose greatest crime appears to be that they are looking after their loved ones. That is shocking. And that is what concerns me when we have these big stories about major benefit busts, because I always look who is going to be ultimately paying. And it would appear that it is just these unpaid carers, and let's, you know, the DWP want to attack them, want to go after them. And coming from the background that I do, we were raised on benefit out of necessity, and now I pay fully into the tax system. And I am more than happy to support people who need it like this, because a lot of people can't even manage to actually care for their loved ones. So when people are able to, we should be making sure that they are decently and properly remunerated and we don't persecute them. On that note, let's find out the new UK news headlines from Gemma Cooper.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have a great conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here she is, Gemma. It is Friday and we are loving it. Are we on the home straight now?
I think so. But funnily, great minds think alike is that was one of the stories that's in my three top UK headlines at the top of this hour. I mean, it's an absolute travesty. And it's not just the Department of Work and Pensions that are coming after the unpaid carers who are absolutely acted in good faith. Many of them are working part time. Most of them are women. Let's face facts. Most of the unpaid caring duties done in families are women. That's a statistical fact. That's not conjecture. They're working part-time, trying to hold down jobs outside the home. And when they're in the home, they're caring for sick relatives or sometimes friends, actually. And they were told they could claim carer's allowance, which I think is a paltry £80 to £90 a week. And it was obviously then combined with their part-time earnings, pushed them over the tax threshold, but they didn't know. So in the Department of Work and Pensions, and more sinisterly, His Majesty's Revenue and Customs are all after them, you know. And you don't mess with the tax man. That's a well-known saying in the UK. Don't mess with the tax man. Whatever your position on tax, they're the only officials in the UK that can come into your house without a warrant and can take whatever they want. So not only have you got the stress of low wages, part-time work, the stress of looking after family and friends, you've now got the stress of the tax man after you. Why don't the tax man go after the corporations? Go after the corporations that are all registered in different countries and then come here, use our roads to deliver their goods, use our educated workforce to work for them, but don't pay any tax, you know, build their properties, build their massive factories on our land, but don't pay any tax. Go after the corporations, HMRC. Do your job properly. This story makes me really mad. I always try and end Friday on a positive note, but I saw that story, same as you, Sonia, and I thought that is a microcosm of how the world is. Let's go after the little people. Put the boot on the little people. These people are terrified. They don't necessarily have the strength to stand up to the system like you and I do. But they need our support. They need our help. They need our compassion. That's what's lacking in the system, isn't it? Compassion, empathy. Oh. No, the tax man saw an easy target and he's going for it. Horrible, horrible story. Horrible.
Absolutely. Completely agree with you. It just makes me so upset. It really does. But these people will already be struggling. They really will. And, you know, and to be able to be juggling work and juggling the care of a loved one and with a multitude of needs, whether that's, you know, age related or whether it's a disability, whatever it is, I have seen firsthand and close up what it takes to actually care for somebody day in, day out. And honestly, if we give out awards, or if there's any justification for giving out awards, we should be awarding carers, right? Right. We should absolutely be awarding carers. And part of the problem, of course, one of the stories that we did yesterday, Gemma, which wasn't actually with you, and I'm going to be really quick about this, but it was about an elderly woman dying in her bed. Her catheter hadn't been changed for 2 days. And again, it was problems in our care system, in our social care system. And we just, honestly, we just don't seem to care. And I say we as a general, obviously, because you and I obviously care, but we don't seem to care about our most vulnerable. And that includes our elderly and our disabled. And that just breaks my heart, Gemma. It really does. And you and I pay taxes, and I pay taxes exactly for this reason, to take care of our most vulnerable.
Trouble is, the money doesn't go there, does it? That's the problem. You pay it in good faith, but that's not where the government is spending your money. I mean, I'll bring up, there's two other headlines I want to talk about at this hour. But of course, at the top of the last hour, we talked about, you know, defence spending being boosted to 2.5% of GDP by both Labour and the Tories to try and keep Donald Trump happy, no one else. That's where the money's going. It's going to Ukraine. It's going to the Middle East. I mean, we know that. It's a scratch record here on TNT. It doesn't go where it should go. The only weapon we have is pushback. And the only weapon we have, it's a bit like the Taxpayers Alliance advising people to get in touch in the UK with their local authorities now, because local authority council tax have gone up. That's the charge we pay in the UK for local services like repairing the roads, collecting the bins, none of which are being done. And because it's not being done, we should be a thorn in the side of the authorities. Still pay it, but become so annoying that they have to answer you. They have to answer you. They have to give you accountability. It's your money. Simple as that. Anyway, we'll stop with this one because it's going to make me cross. Let's do two other stories since the top of the last hour that I really do think are worthy of mention, apart from the carers one. The first one is the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, head of the Church of England here in the UK, has drafted in a load of celebrity mates to spread the word of Jesus and the Bible to young people, to children. There's going to be 6 episodes of a new TV series called The Jesus Storybook Bible, and he's drafted in celebrities such as Bear Grylls and Mary Berry, very well known here in the UK, to try and boost the popularity of Jesus, the Bible, and the Church of England. I think we'll discuss that a bit more in a minute. And some good news. Let's see. The UK economy has grown 0.3% in March, on top of the 0.1% growth we saw in February, which experts are saying will take us out of a recession. Oh, that's good news, you think, but the prices in our supermarkets and our shops are not reflecting that. Yesterday, I read a story, a bottle of olive oil in some places will cost you £13. £13. People are stopping buying these very expensive products now, as they just cannot make the cash in their pocket stretch. So we may be coming out of a recession on paper. I don't think many people in the UK are feeling that in their pockets.
I agree with you. And of course, Tesco posted record profits this week, as we know, as one example. So many people have, but corporations, British Gas, Tesco as one example, they've really, you know, made hay, haven't they, on the back of our cost of living crisis. So, but we should take a good story when we find it. So we're going to accept that as fulsomely as we humanly can. Let's talk about the Archbishop of Canterbury, and I'll try and talk about him without wanting to chuck up or find a local sick bag anywhere. Talk to us, Gemma.
Well, I do think this story, you know, when you consider yesterday that we were talking about the church, yes, it was the Catholic Church we were talking about yesterday, and this is the Church of England, but it's still Christianity. I mean, yesterday we were talking about paedophilia within the Catholic Church, and now we're talking about Justin Welby wanting to spread the good news about, children come to the church. You know, it's really, really good. But I think this has got straw clutching written all over it. He says he's delighted to be roping in his celebrity friends. He's friends with these people, apparently, to read these 6 stories from the Bible in a 6-part series called Jesus Storytime Bible. It's a book that sold 6 million copies around the world, and it is to get young people engaged with the Word of God, with Jesus, which, you know, if you believe and you're religious, absolutely, that's your choice. But I think this does have, for me, for example, Bear Grylls, well-known survivalist. He's made loads of TV programs. He's traveled. He takes celebrities around the world himself to put them through endurance tests. He's going to read the story about David and Goliath, you know, is standing up in strength. Mary Berry, really well-known TV chef here in the UK, one of the judges of the Great British Bake Off. She's going to read the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000. But does it not smack of, just cast your mind back, Sonia, a few years, those celebrities telling us to all go and get the jab? You know, why do you need celebrities? If your message is clear and your message is worthy, why do you need to draft in celebrities? What power do they have to add validity to a message that is millennia old? Same with the jab. If the jab was so brilliant, why do you need to draft in a raft of celebrities to tell us all what to do? This is what this looks like. This is what this looks like to me. The parallels do seem quite striking, actually. It was only a few years ago we had Sir Michael Caine, Sir Elton John, you know, members of the club that you were talking about at the top of the last hour, all telling us what to put in our bodies. Now we've got all these celebrities who have huge profiles telling us what we should be believing from a very young age before we've had a chance to look and judge and make up our own minds about where we want our spirituality and faith to be focused on. It doesn't have to be the Christian church. So the Archbishop of Canterbury, he's loving this. He says he's beyond delighted that he's got celebrities here. He says, we all love stories, don't we? That's what he's saying. They remind us of who we are. I think the key word is possibly stories. You know, many people are saying, don't take the Bible too literally. It's a story of allegories and parallels. It's not necessarily truth. But obviously, get young hearts and minds young, and the kind of inference being you've got them for life. Whether that works or not, I don't know. But this whole thing of celebrity culture, first of all, they're telling us to get the jab. Now they're telling us to believe in Jesus. I don't know how much they're being paid by the Church of England to do this. I doubt any of them. They've all got agents. They're all incredibly famous and busy. I very much doubt they're doing it for free. I could be wrong. Call me cynical. Could be wrong. But I do think that Archbishop of Canterbury, the former oil executive, who himself has admitted he's been on antidepressants for 14 years. So I don't know if that's the stress of the job or the fact that even the love of God can't save him from depression. I don't know. But that's where we are with the Church of England today. Celebrities leading the way.
Fabulous. I mean, the thing is, like you say, their stories, right? But what about reality? I don't recall one of them standing up against the totalitarianism that we have been through during the COVID period. Not one of them. In fact, I think Archbishop of Canterbury, he made this, didn't he make a series of really heinous comments, including that Jesus would have wanted us to take the vaccine. I'm sure that was him. Horrendous.
Did, yeah.
Horrendous. And that's why, you know, when you say you want to talk about him, I'm like, I automatically have, and it's not because I'm anti-Christian, not at all. I mean, I'm not religious, but it's not that. The fact is, I truly believe if Jesus were alive today, pretty damn sure he would have stood up against, you know, the central bank digital currency, digital ID, against the totalitarianism that we've been through, against the fascism that we're dealing with. But that's not what these people are about at all. So, yeah, that's the kind of story that makes me feel a little bit ick, Gemma, if I'm really honest. The moment that I know that celebrities are involved, it is, do you know what? It's exactly what you're talking about. It just feels like coercion again, doesn't it? Always. It's always about, why are they trying to persuade us? Why do they need to bring in people with a following in order to be able to say this, to convey this? So on that note, Gemma, anything nice that you want to tell us before you leave us this morning?
Well, I do have my former weather presenter hat on, and it is going to be in the UK a really lovely weekend, and I know that Mike Ryan, boss of TNT, he told me before I started, he said, don't talk about the weather. You know, that's your old life. But actually, fair play, Mike, you're the boss. But, you know, who doesn't love a bit of sunshine? Vitamin D. It's been very cloudy, grey and wet in the UK for the last few weeks. Get out there, get some vitamin D on your bodies, get your immune system boosted, because we've got a war ahead of us and we need to be fighting fit. There we go.
Absolutely. And it's all right for people who live in Australia and get to enjoy sunshine all year. Yeah. Well, not all year round. But you know what I mean? They have wonderful climate. They have no idea what we have to endure here, where every other day is rainy. Yeah. So yes, of course, we are delighted about that forecast. Gemma, thank you ever so much for being with us every day, twice a day on the Sonia Poulton Show. We truly appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be right back.
TNT's Kate Shimarani.
Compulsory house purchase to make way for the immigrants that are coming. So is that going to be David Beckham's house? Is that going to be Gary Lineker's house? Is that going to be some MPs' houses? What about that big house that Zelensky, with his khaki gear, you know, 45,000 khaki t-shirts and matching cargo pants, not a bullet hole or shrapnel hole in any of them. Has he purchased Highgrove, 20, whatever it was, 20 million? Are they going to be using all those? What about all those rooms in Buckingham Palace or everywhere else? No, they're probably going to rob the elderly of their homes. So people out there, British people, an Englishman's home is his castle. Are you going to get off your knees yet? I know you're all going down the gym and pumping iron. What's that all about with your tats and your turkey teeth? We need real people to stand up to this.
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTradio.live.
And I am delighted to be joined by my next guest, and I was just working out with him, how do I pronounce his name? Because we all know what an absolute mess I make of pronunciations when it comes to names. Youssef Alelu, good morning to you, Youssef. Lovely to have you with us.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much, Sonia. It's my pleasure to be with you.
It is my pleasure indeed. You are a political analyst, you're a writer and expert in Palestine and the Middle East, of course, and you have a very active Instagram account. And some of the things, I've listened to some of your interviews and they are really touching, very profound about what is going on in Gaza. And, you know, I cannot forget when talking to you that you have family in Gaza, right?
Yes, I do. They are split between the south in Rafah and the north in Gaza City itself, where it is experiencing a man-made famine, a starvation.
And I think one of the things that you've acknowledged, and certainly I have and other people have, is the difference in the UK response to Gaza and Ukraine. What are your thoughts about that?
It's obviously clear the lack of seriousness on part of the Western governments, including the UK, when it comes to delivering aid and at the same time delivering weapons to Israel to kill civilians in Gaza. It's hypocrisy. It's double standards policy. It shows the level of racism, I would say, the level of, you know, humiliation to Palestinians when it comes to people brown in the Middle East. And the response to Ukraine was so much different in the sense also we are trying to bring our families to safety as a British citizen. And the UK government is reluctant, is not listening to us. They say the Ukrainian visa family scheme was one-off scheme. And the UK hosted almost 300,000 Ukrainians, which is a good thing to do to welcome refugees fleeing conflicts. But us Palestinians, we can see that we don't count in the eyes of the UK government.
Yes, yeah, different rules, isn't it? Unfortunately, Gaza is not on the right side when it comes to our political representatives. You know exactly what I'm talking about here. Let us look at an article that was published this week by Ramzi Baroud, and it's an extraordinary piece, but I think you probably will agree with it. And it's about how the killing of humanitarian workers is a strategy. Obviously, we heard about the aid workers last week and the drivers. And it was, oh, this is a terrible mistake. This would, you know, wasn't supposed to have happened, even though, you know, the IDF were aware of the movements and it was in a no conflict zone. The vehicles were very clearly marked about what they were. But this is a deliberate strategy, isn't it?
Well, the IYF, the Israeli Occupation Forces, they consider themselves one of the most advanced armies in the world, and especially in the Middle East. So if they cannot identify vehicles used by international staff, this is a disaster, because they claim to have been carrying precision strikes. But if they intentionally target those aid workers and even civilians in Gaza, let's not forget 30,000 or almost a plus.
Yeah, so what we're obviously talking about is the deliberate targeting of not just aid workers, but of anybody who can provide any form of supply, right?
Yes, I cannot imagine what they think when they target those innocent people, when they target the international aid staff. They killed already 140 Palestinian aid workers. They killed 126 journalists. They killed tens of paramedics. They attacked hospitals. I mean, how that is moral? This shows that Israel is the country number one in the world that attacks and targets children and attacks hospitals. This is due to the impunity that Israel has been enjoying for the past, you know, seven decades. You cannot claim to be the most moral army and the only democracy in the Middle East, and the world is watching you, watching this digital genocide unfold and being broadcasted by the victims. And we've been calling and urging, millions of people have been calling for ceasefire. Please stop. This is not going to work. Israel must be pressured to stop. It's not going to stop by itself. There must be some accountability, some embargo, some punishment to say, look, you cannot carry on. You are a spoiled brat entity. You must be punished. Until then Israel will change course. Before that, it will continue doing what it's doing.
The difficulty is, of course, is the complicity of our political representatives in the UK. You live in the UK, you know what's going on here politically. And that is, so many of our political parties and the members within those political parties are part of Friends of Israel. So they are compromised. Many politicians receive money from Israel lobby groups, so they are compromised. So this is a huge problem, isn't it? Let us go briefly to some news headlines, Youssef, and we will be right back.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Newsflash!
Yeah. Are you ready? Now, without further ado.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, has been detained at London's Belmarsh prison for 5 years, a situation Amnesty International describes as a mockery of the USA's obligations under international law. Australia is experiencing its sharpest increase in rental costs in 17 years, significantly impacting those who do not own a home. Domain's quarterly rental report highlights a nearly 5% rise in the median rental prices across Australia's capital cities to $630 per week, from $601.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm here with political analyst Youssef Al-Elou, and we are talking about the very serious disparities that are taking place between Israel and Gaza. And one of the things that we hear a lot, Youssef, and especially from our political representatives, is Israel has a right to defend itself. What do you think whenever you hear that well-worn, trotted-out phrase now?
I think it's Palestinians who have the right to defend themselves too, who have been under colonization occupation for almost 7 decades. Why Israel is allowed to arm itself from head to toe, with the latest technology, weapons, you call it, and they transform Gaza into a testing experimental ground. Whereas Palestinians under crippling siege, under occupation, they are not allowed to resist even peacefully. Look what happened a few years ago when thousands of Palestinians were marching peacefully along the Gaza border during the Great March of Return. They were shot like sitting ducks, journalists, paramedics. Israel is enjoying this. You know, these young Israeli soldiers, when they shoot and kill, it's like they think they are in a video game. And the idea that the whole world is continuing to say Israel has got a right for self-defense. Israel is an occupying power. It must protect the population under its occupation. They must provide the basic necessities, water, electricity, food. But look what they are doing. They are starving population. People in Gaza have no electricity for the past 6 months, no drinking water, no sense of stability. The drones annoys people on a daily basis. Look what happened with the people who are trying to depart Gaza. You know, leaving Gaza is not picnic. It's so much suffering. You have to prepare. You have to prepare lots amount of money. And when the Israelis show that they found a few Kalashnikovs here and there, it's like they consider this an achievement. Come on, you know, you've got tanks, you've got warplanes, you've got warships, and they just try to find any justification to say that, you know, Hamas is using the Palestinians as a human shield. Well, you know, Israel has been using Palestinians as human shields. Israel has been transforming Gaza into a testing ground and as a scapegoat to scare its neighbors in the region. And it seems now Israel thinks it is a country above the international law. It can do whatever it wants. It can attack whenever it wants. It's easily can create justification and falsification and fake videos and propaganda just to justify its attacks. And the world knows that Israel also one of those few countries in the world that it is relying on lies.
Well, the problem, of course, is that the PR campaign for Israel is absolutely significantly failing now. When you have kids on TikTok who are more aware than ever before about what is taking place, I think it's quite extraordinary, really. But one of the things that I've heard you say, and it did shock me, was that the sheer amount of money that Gazans needed to be able to leave. You were saying it was about $7,000 each person.
Yes. Well, now, Gaza has been under a crippling siege in what is known as the world's largest open air prison. And when we use this terminology, some of the Zionists, they laugh and say, oh, look, you yourself, Youssef, you've been filming Gaza when you were in the summer. And the beauty that we are seeing, it doesn't reveal that Gaza has been a siege. I said it has been a siege, but we Palestinians, with our determination, with our private investments, we have transformed that prison into a paradise. We have beautified that prison. I produced some videos when I was visiting in the summer, and it was really amazing that I was able to enjoy Gaza before it's being destroyed in front of our eyes. I saw the family, I met my family members, and I'm glad that at least I saw my sister Asma was killed during this genocide alongside with her children. So leaving Gaza is not easy. And I would like to continue what I wanted to start, which is Israel has transformed this bigger prison into a concentration camp. And now this concentration camp is being transformed into an extermination camp, because the carpet bombing that we have been seeing shows that Israel has no disregard It has no regard to the loss of human lives. The indiscriminate bombardment, the tank shelling, seeing people panicking, it's a hunger game when those airplanes drop aid and some of those people, they drown because they cannot swim. They try to grab whatever they want, what is available, and many of the parachutes fail to open. So we acknowledge that there's no safer place in Gaza. So to leave Gaza, you have to go through the Egyptian Rafah border crossing. This crossing is between Gaza and Egypt. We share a 12-kilometer border. And the only access point for us to travel to the outside world is via Cairo International Airport. So we take a transportation from Rafah to Cairo. In normal days, it should take approximately 5 hours. But due to the bureaucracies and many checkpoints along the Sinai Peninsula, it could take 24 hours, 48 hours. So, in every conflict, there are profiteers. People take advantage of the suffering of other people. Unfortunately, people are shocked to the core. They feel that they are being dehumanized, they are being used, blackmailed, extorted. Every person who wants to leave Gaza, you have to pay between $5,000, $7,000, extra 500 fees. So if you are a family of five, you are talking about $40,000, $50,000. Some people, by the way, now, they have started selling their properties in order to get the money to pay to the Egyptian authorities and leave to the outside world to escape this genocide. What about those who can't afford?
This is terrible. Not only is there a deliberate displacement clearly taking place, but many people are forced to even, sell up their own properties. Incidentally, I saw your videos about how beautiful it was. Mm. And that is not the public image that we often see when we think of Gaza either. And absolutely stunning. And I'm very sorry to hear about your family. That's heartbreaking. But the other thing that you said, and I think it's interesting, is you said, obviously, because of the Balfour Declaration that took place, you said that the UK now must play a role in writing and correcting this historical injustice.
Yes, very much indeed. If you ask any Palestinian in Palestine, not only in Gaza, they will tell you that it is Great Britain who is the main responsible for our tragedy, for our suffering for the past 75 years. Because Balfour, he had no right to grant a homeland to other people in Palestine at the expense of our suffering, made us refugees scattered all over the world. And until this moment, the UK government did not recognize Palestine as a state, which is a slap in the face. They continue to provide Israel with ammunition, and they did not, until this moment, apologize for that historical injustice. They did not provide compensation. One of the compensations that they can offer is that, they can take a responsibility and intervene in one way or another to allow us to bring our families to safety, since we are British citizens. Our numbers, if they agree to give us this honorable, or because they say the UK has been a sanctuary to welcome refugees. Now it's the time. Now, this is the time to show who's in the right side of history and who is in the right side of conspiracy. And our numbers, if they allow us to bring them, wouldn't exceed 5,000 members, whereas the Ukrainians who were welcomed here, now they exceeded almost 300,000. And we say we must give British people the opportunity to sponsor refugees. The UK, the London, is one of the most important hubs to show solidarity with the Palestinians. And I think the UK people, they acknowledge that it is their government, it is our government, the UK government, is the one who must really intervene. Because we know that the US administration is the one who is enjoying and playing the scene now, because it is the world's closest ally to Israel, and also the UK. Look what some of the statements made by the Israeli ambassador, also a number of officials, UK officials, the one who was sacked, Suella Braverman. It seems that they work to appease the Israeli government. They don't work
well. They're Zionists, you said. We must be very clear that, good luck with attempting to get the UK government to rectify this situation, because it's top heavy with Zionists. This is a reality. And Suella Braverman, I have stated very clearly on this show that I believe she has very significantly split loyalties. And the way that she was trying to create some sort of civil war in our country, just horrendous. So I am no fan of Suella Braverman, believe me on that. But listen, isn't Yusuf. Before you go, just please comment on this for me. To stay, it's not a solution as far as you're concerned, right?
No, it's a racist solution. It's not going to grant Palestinians their awaited, long-awaited inalienable rights. Israel killed the taste of solution anyway. And Netanyahu recently said that he will not allow the establishment of a Palestinian state, and said, you know, we Palestinians, we advocate now for one democratic, secular state for all of its citizens with equal rights, Jews, Muslims, Christians, different colors, ethnicities live in one country under one constitution, the majority rules. You call it the United States of Palestine and Israel, you call it the Holy Land. We have no problem with the name. And Israel says, no, we want a Jewish state, because once a solution allowing Palestinians to live in this state means the end of the Zionist project. So Israel wants to keep and maintain the status quo. It wants to continue with this apartheid regime. And it's up to the world to intervene. And look, you know, Israel has violated the international system and sabotaged the international system and set a precedent that Israel can do whatever it wants under the slogan of self-defense, scaring other nations and waving the anti-Semitic card. You know, the time is of the essence, and I think the world shouldn't tolerate this anymore. So absolutely. We blame the UK government, we blame the US administration, we blame the Western governments who are watching us being slaughtered for the past 6 months.
Understood. Thank you, Yusuf. Thank you for joining us this morning. I pray for your family. I pray for all people who are caught up in this horrendous conflict. Everybody, this is Yusuf Al-Elou. You can find him on Instagram and check out his IG channel. Thank you so much, Yusuf. Take good care of yourself. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Sonia.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
She was reading at a second grade level in kindergarten.
Pod 4 swimming before she was 7.
Finally convinced mom to get her ears pierced in the 3rd grade.
Came in 2nd at her 5th grade spelling bee.
Drill team in the 7th.
And with one stroke of the keyboard.
One click of the mouse.
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Report a cyber tip today.
The conversation continues with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
Now, this time last week, we were joined by Dr. Shankara Shetty. He was telling us about the persecution by the health professional authorities of South Africa. This was all because Dr. Shetty put his patients first during COVID-19 and refused to blindly follow orders, and so much the better for it, frankly. And I'm delighted to be joined by, Shabnam Palesa Mohammed. You may know her. I certainly do. Good morning, Shabnam. How are you?
Good morning, Sonia. What an absolute joy to see you again on TNT Radio.
Oh, it's a joy to see you. You are, of course, a human rights activist. You're a journalist. You're a lawyer. You do all manner of things, Shabnam. You're very, very busy and productive, which is absolutely wonderful. But all of it in the name of justice, isn't it, really? It's about tackling injustices. That's definitely your thing. And Dr. Shetty is an absolute case in point. And I noted yesterday he released on social media his revised charge sheet. 4 counts. What can you tell us about this?
Well, I've had a look at these four counts, and of course, I've been involved in the disciplinary hearing on day one and day two, quite controversially at that too, but we'll get to that. And I don't think that the revised charges have a snowball's chance in hell of succeeding any more than the initial charges did. They're longer paragraphs, but they're certainly not more substantial. The first one speaks to his eighth-day protocol, count one, which of course will not succeed because the eighth-day protocol is found to be successful, saving thousands of lives. The second revised charge is around the treatment protocol that he used, specifically ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, corticosteroids, etc. These apparently were not approved by the equally controversial SAHPRA, equal to HPCSA, that is. And apparently that contravenes Rule 27AE. But of course, we have a doctor-patient relationship, and those drugs were not banned, so that charge is not going to stick anyway. Count three is around casting reflections on the probity of other healthcare practitioners by stating their engineered protocols in hospital to cause death and damage COVID-19 patients. Well, that is an established fact. There are doctors who have been found to commit gross violations of fundamental health rights, not only during COVID-19, but prior to that. We have witnesses and evidence statements. I certainly have interviewed many people who have been violated in hospitals through treatment protocols that were harmful. We even have whistleblower nurses. So that one's not going to stand. In fact, it's going to open up a far broader conversation into what exactly happened in our hospitals here in the South Africa, in the UK, in different parts of the world. Ooh. And the final charge is around mischaracterizing the cause and identification of COVID illness, spike protein, toxicity of the vaccine, treatment and management of severe illness. I mean, the deluge of evidence that's come out in the last 3 years is not something that can be trifled with. He's really looking forward to getting back in the ring on these revised charges. So he's feeling very positive and motivated, as am I. I think it's time to air what's really going on in our country, in that the regulator and this Health Professions Council are very much compromised by conflicts of interest. And we need to throw sunlight on that and move towards a better way for health, freedom and sovereignty.
I mean, how ironic that they are persecuting him and they are now in danger of exposing their own very serious failings and complicity through the persecution of a doctor who was prepared to put his patients first, because that's what he did, right? He wouldn't just, because these charges, when I read through them, it's just full of the usual language, how he failed to you know, conduct himself in a manner that was part of the norm. And that is all what it's about, isn't it? It is about being being complicit in this, and he wasn't prepared to do that. Tell us your observations of the hearings.
Well, the committee was quite pleasant and constructive. The HPCA's counsel was rather difficult. In fact, he threatened me with criminal charges for reporting on the matter, and his photograph being included on Twitter. I did say I was not there as a journalist. I was there as an activist and a member of three non-governmental organizations, two of which are international and have a public interest in the matter. And of course, it was a public case. But what they're trying to do is to terrorize doctors and healthcare workers into submission. Prior to COVID-19, had a doctor used treatment protocols that worked, there's a 50% chance that doctor would receive a presidential award or something of that sort. But the landscape has immensely changed due to funding by the pharmaceutical industry, which is, of course, evidenced by the facts. I did write an article around the HPCSA specifically, which is riddled by mismanagement, conflicts of interest, and corruption. This is the same organization that's coming after doctors like Shankara Chetty, who, in my view, amongst other doctors that are similarly being persecuted, should be the ones leading at the HPCSA, at SAHPRA, the Health Products Regulatory Authority, at the Department of Health. But of course, we have to move towards that with a groundswell of public opinion that's saying not more than this. We're not going to tolerate any more than this. And people actually said to me, where is the hearing happening? We want to be there in support of Dr. Shankara Chetty and our doctors who saved lives by doing what is principled and ethical and aligned with the Hippocratic Oath.
I just find it extraordinary that we've had to do such a pushback that doctors have been persecuted all around the world. No wonder so few have been prepared to stand up and speak, though, Shabnam, because it's such a chilling effect, isn't it, when they isolate these doctors and they come after them and they set about destroying their lives. Look at what they've done to Shankara Chetty, as you absolutely say. And we've seen it over here, obviously, in the UK. I know you're familiar with Dr. David Cartland, Dr. Ahmed Malik, there's just loads, Dr. Sam White. They've done exactly the same thing. And it sort of makes you understand, although not necessarily approve of it, why so few doctors were prepared to speak out.
100%. I mean, they've got families to think about and bills to pay, but they're not alone. And I think by joining forces, we're certainly stronger together. We keep exposing the rot within these institutions that are past their sell-by date and need to be replaced by ethical workers and healthcare systems. Having said that, freedom of expression, Sonia, is at the center of this discussion. And it's what was argued strongly by Dr. Chetty's legal team with, you know, copious case law in South Africa, which jealously protects the right to free speech, except in cases like these, where they're saying a doctor doesn't have the right to speak in a Zoom meeting, sharing his views. He's not giving advice to patients. He's sharing his views. And he has a right to do so in terms of the Constitution, which is what they're trying to limit and constrain. And if they get away with it now, that will enable the WHO, which, of course, as you know, is facilitating a power grab through the IHR 2005 amendments and the WHO treaty, to do even more to us in collaboration with their big funder partners like, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, Bill Gates, MasterCard, et al. And so this is a very important case. In fact, all of these are. And the determination to push back cannot be underscored. We cannot give an inch of ground, because an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
100%. And the thing is you just touched on something there, which is absolutely key. And this is not just restricted, for example, to South Africa or the UK. This is a globalist structure taking place. And so the reason why, one of the reasons certainly why this is key and why we must provide as much support and pushback as possible to doctors like Shankara is simply because if you get the precedent set there, we will also, it will be rolled over here and other countries all around the world. Have you ever known such a time where we are being governed and controlled by, you know, foreign powers, essentially, just sort of grouping together against us?
I think what we're experiencing is actually corporate colonialism.
Yes.
That's exactly what it is. Corporates have so much power internationally in all of our countries, it makes them the de facto deep state. And they are therefore pulling the strings through funding, through revolving doors, where someone from Pfizer can start working in government or someone in government can start working in Pfizer. But it extends beyond the pharmaceutical industry. It's agriculture, it's education, it's our criminal law system, it's banking and insurance, right? That's a whole mafia subject on its own. And so we've got to focus on exposing corporate colonialism, pharmaceutical imperialism, and how we can take our power back. I will be hosting, for example, a course on understanding and addressing conflicts of interest together with our resident specialist, Fahri Hassan, here from South Africa. And people are really excited to get to the depths of pulling back that curtain and seeing why things operate the way that they do in each and all of our countries. It's too much work for us to do all the investigations ourselves. So rather we empower people to investigate, know how to investigate, know how to expose it, and know how to demand that the system must change. I would also encourage people to actively use the right to boycott. Many countries have elections coming up. Use that right to vote effectively and say, we're not going to vote for any political party that's persecuting doctors who've done their work or any healthcare worker that's, of course, going along with the WHO-facilitated power grab, or that is a puppet of the World Economic Forum and or the United Nations, which in itself is seeking standing authority over what they call complex global emergencies, including but not limited to, Sonia, pandemics, climate change, wars, and conflict. So you can see where this is going in terms of a one world government, but we've never been as awake to it as we are now. So I'm really excited about shaping the kind of future we need, we want, and we deserve.
I feel exactly the same way. I feel that we have everything to play for. I've never known a time when so many people have become alert and awake to what is going on, Shabnam. And so in that respect, I find it really exciting and really invigorating. And I do believe that we stand a winning chance, because we must not forget there are absolutely more of us than there are of them. But it always shocks me how the electorate asks so little of the politicians that they are prepared to elect into power. I just find that absolutely extraordinary. So moving forward, as far as Dr. Chetty is concerned, where do we go to next with him?
So where we were at was basically a hearing on the charges, whether they're substantial enough to take it forward into evidence. And of course, they weren't. So they were given 15 days to revise the charges. They've done that. So now a new date will be set down to examine the second set of charges, which I think is ludicrous. You don't get a second bite of the cherry. If you got it wrong the first time, why do we need to go back to touch? But apparently that's how they work. Something else we need to change. And then, of course, we'll go through the same process again, examining those charges only, not the evidence. And if they stand, then we move forward into evidence. And of course, if we don't succeed at the disciplinary stage of the process, then the matter will go forward to a high court for a right to review the original decision taken by the HPCSA based on the complaint by one Professor Francois Fenta, who is steeped in conflicts of interest with the pharmaceutical industry. Of course, he's not the only one. There were other names that were raised in the disciplinary hearing, people who've been serving in South Africa and simultaneously the interests of the WHO and the pharmaceutical industry. So no doubt this case and others are going to open up a whole world of information to us. And we hope that the public is going to continue to support our healthcare workers. And I hope that people make a decision to become radically healthy, because that's a way in which we extricate ourselves from this matrix.
Yes, indeed it is. Listen, Shabnam, I'm so grateful for you joining us this morning and enlightening us on this situation. Of course, we all at TNT hope for the absolute best outcome for Dr. Chetty. And the thing is, that going back to exactly what we've said, and that is, this is so much more than just about one country and about one doctor. This is a global issue. And if we don't provide that pushback, then we are all in trouble. So what can we do to support Dr. Chetty?
Well, we started a campaign last year to ask people to write to the HPCSA expressing their views, and some of them did, and then the email was blocked. But thankfully, there are other email addresses available on that charge sheet that you can address your thoughts and concerns with. You can also watch the show I've done with Dr. Shankara Chetty, Dr. Susan Fosler, Dr. Tross Becker, Dr. Jackie Stone, all African doctors, so you get to understand how our struggles are intrinsically the same across the world and how we can support each other, because having an international focus really does help. You can also read a legal brief that's been produced by the World Council for Health around preventing the abuse of human rights to public health emergencies. Understand the legal criteria in international human rights law to declare a public health emergency. When you understand it and look at COVID, you will realize that your government behaved completely unlawfully, and that needs to be challenged all the way to the court to prevent us from being sucked into further public health emergencies based on, you know, whatever plans they have in mind as part of the poly crises. Being aware of our human rights is really the most fundamental thing we can do, and continue to support these doctors by making their struggles visible, both in the online space and in public. When there are hearings, go with your placard, go with your pickets, make your voice heard. And of course, become radically healthy.
Peter in the comments says, corporate colonialism is an excellent description of all this. It is, Peter. I shall be adding that now to my own artillery. It really is. It sort of sums it up so brilliantly and so succinctly. Shabnam, thank you so much for joining us on today's News Talk. Greatly appreciate your insight, your update into Dr. Shankara Chetty, what he's going through. And as we've said, this isn't just about one doctor. I mean, it is at this moment in time, but it's about many others who are silenced, the chilling effect that has taken place. Everybody, this is Shabnam Palesa Mohammed, and she is, if you don't already know, a human rights activist, a lawyer, and so much more besides. Thank you so much, Shabnam. Have an excellent weekend. Take good care of yourself. Thank you for the sterling work that you do, by the way. I think it is absolutely amazing. And on that note, thank you. Take good care of yourself. Thank you. And that sort of brings us well, really close to the end of the Sonia Poulton Show this week. This eclipse week, this stunning eclipse week. And what an astonishing week this has been. It started with a new moon solar eclipse, which turned parts of North America dark in a moment. And it heralded a whole new beginning for all of us. This week, we've seen the first signs that the White House no longer sees the viability of attempting to extradite Julian Assange. Biden is almost incapable of even walking that he is, has told us that they are considering dropping their claim against Assange. Then there's the CAS review, which has taken place in the UK. Absolutely groundbreaking. This will protect many children for many years to come. And that is just for starters. I'm sure you have your own stories about what has been extraordinary about this eclipse week. And it's not yet over. I defy anyone to argue with me about the importance of the universe talking to us. And an eclipse is one way that it does that. So on that note, I want to thank you all for being here, all the commentators, all the wonderful people who make this show happen. My face may be the one on the can, but trust me, there's a whole barrage of people who bring me here day in and day out. And I'm grateful to each and every one of them. Stick around, of course. TNT is absolutely the place to be. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you.